Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt and the show is brought to you by the always updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate New York, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now Boston, Massachusetts. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that is our guarantee to you. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's very, very competitive real estate market, you've got that going for you if you don't have cash. And many people do not have cash. And so if you want to make sure that you can compete for the house you really want, you'll need that pre-purchase commitment available only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And along with that, you'll get personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. That's our assurance to you. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline. The Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property that's listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate New York, even out to Phoenix, Arizona. And the local number here, though, is 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. The hotline will prompt you with the choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve. And that's also an exclusive of Hunt Real Estate. We have a very active market right now, and it's a very interesting time because if you look all around you, there's all kinds of things going on that weren't going on, say, 6 months ago in terms of, the concerns of people in the community. But one of the two areas of the real estate industry that are booming right now is housing. And if you want to participate in that, you want to make sure that you know everything you can about the market. And there's one place to do that. That's by calling Hunt Real Estate, 633-9400. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. We look forward to seeing them all playing sometime very soon. We are broadcast live here at WBEN 930 AM. And if you'd like to participate in today's show, you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930, or you can text us at that same number, 803-0930. If you're long distance, you can call us at 1-800-616-9236, and if you're mobile, star 930, those are all free calls. We have a very special show for you today. We're going to be looking at really, I think, for many of us, a very, very important issue, and that is how the business community is affected by as a group, is affected by everything we've been through since the middle of March. And to help me with that, probably the leading expert in this area is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, Dottie Gallagher. Good morning, Dottie.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back. It's been several months, and a lot has changed in the 8 or 9 months since you've been on last. Tell me, you have an agenda every year for the partnership. What was it, and how has it changed? That's a broad question, but I've got all this documentation in front of me about the partnership and from the partnership, and there's a lot of stuff here, but it has to really change your life, what's happened.
Well, you know, for us, our not only the business community's world changed, but the partnership's world changed, just like everyone else's individual worlds have changed. I will just tell you, for us, the minute that everything hit, we were able to remotely 100% of our staff, and we really reallocated our entire team. You know, we knew we weren't going to be doing any live events, but we've stood up a live help desk for any business member or not member that has a question. And of course, businesses have had so many questions in the beginning about sort of what are the restrictions around closing and then going through the stimulus package and how do I access it, to where we are now, which is how do we begin to come out of this crazy time. Now, we have done over, 23, 24 different webinars. We've had over 4,000 business people participate and register for those, 1,300 organizations. We stood up a virtual manufacturers group where manufacturers who had essential workers and were open, were really talking to each other before there was really any guidance from the state about safe reopening and sharing best practices. We did the same thing with some commercial real estate managers. And we also issued a major research study right after the stimulus package was announced, the Western New York Business Impact Study. And I don't have the results, all the results in front of me, but it was representative of the market. So I tell you all this to tell you that we have been listening. I don't think there's any organization in town who's got a better sense of what the business community is going through than we do, because we are literally hearing from individual companies. So it's very challenging. And as a result of all of that, we have begun to, in earnest, put together what we are calling the Keep Buffalo Niagara Working Plan, which has five different sort of strategic pillars about how we begin to work together to rebuild the economy. So our world is turned upside down, completely different. You know, we didn't do our annual report. We didn't, you know, the whole world has changed. So we have to change with it.
Yesterday they issued the unemployment numbers, or I should say the new jobs numbers were issued yesterday, and they were remarkably good numbers. How are we affected here in Western New York? How does our unemployment or the regaining of jobs, how has that compare with what's going on nationwide?
You know, I think in my mind anyway, there's still a little cloudiness around what is going to be the actual permanent unemployment. So, you know, you've got a bunch of companies that are still on the PPP program, right, which pays payroll. While their businesses hopefully are recovering. So you have to hope that the business has recovered enough that by the time the PPP loan stops paying for that payroll, that that business can support the payroll. And that there's still a question in my mind about how much of that, you know, will really be permanent created jobs. But I will tell you that what we are hearing from many of our employers is they're having trouble finding people to come to work. So, and part of that is, you know, fear. Part of it is the federal $600, which just expired last week. So I don't think we really know where we are. So it's going to, I think the next 30 to 60 days will tell a truer story of where the economy is going to go in terms of unemployment.
Speaking from the real estate industry, when we entered this period of time around the middle of March, for us it was March 16th. That was kind of the day that we drew the line. We closed 54 offices. We went through all the protocol that was required at the time through the CDC and all the executive orders that were being issued at the state and local level, national level as well. And we did what we had to do, and we fortunately had a technology platform in place that we put in place for probably almost 2 years that allowed us to engage with our customers virtually, which we thought would at least keep us somewhat on par with the normal activity that we were used to. What we found, Dottie, and I want what your thoughts were, we found that about half the customers out there were willing to engage virtually, and about half just said, I'll wait. And so we expected that there would be a surge of those people coming back when and if we could ever go back to some degree of normal showings and normal real estate activity. But what we found was that it was almost immediate when we could go back to work. What about other businesses? Some businesses are obviously still shut down, but have you seen a surge back in various industries, or is it just a trickle and it's happening here or there? How do you see it overall and specifically in any given industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think you sort of answered the question. Every industry has a little bit of a different sort of experience. So when you get into, for example, all the tourism-related industries, there's a huge lag there, right? I mean, they're really challenged to survive, to be perfectly honest, hotels, restaurants, et cetera. We know that small Main Street-type retail businesses are really struggling as well, partially because of the occupancy requirements and just people's willingness to get out. But when we talk to, like, our manufacturers as an example, some of them are doing better than they were before the pandemic, but some are still challenged. But their challenges are really around supply chain. Like, can they get the materials that they need? Remember, this is a global pandemic, right? So everything is disrupted. So the ability to sort of get up to speed is not that, from a lack of orders, but a lack of product to make what they make in order to do that. So it's really all over the board. I'm going through a very interesting exercise, Peter. You know, our board of directors has 75 CEOs from every industry representing the business community. And I'm calling everybody individually and basically saying, help me understand what's going on in your business. And I'm about a third of the way through those calls. And I would say there are the vast majority are like, we're going to be okay, you know, steady as she goes. A third or so on one end are saying our business is really disrupted and, you know, we have to do things differently. You know, I think higher ed is an example, very, very challenged in this environment right now. And tourism, as I mentioned. And then we have some businesses that said, you know, the pandemic has been good for our business in some weird way because, you know, they've got HVAC products and things that people need in the new post-pandemic world. So I don't know if that's a good representative sample, but I do feel the surprises that I have gotten on those calls have all been pleasant surprises. I was expecting to hear a lot more. Our business is very challenged. So I'm taking that as a hopeful sign.
You know, I happen to agree with you. I think that on a one-to-one basis, the people I talk to are generally optimistic, and the feeling is that people will find a way to do things that they were used to doing in one way, shape, or form. The big exception, as you know, and you pointed out a couple times already, is the hospitality world. That's where people get together. You know, they travel, they go out for dinner, they go to have a drink with a friend after work, and that's completely disrupted. And how that changes or how that emerges from all this is anybody's guess. But one thing I know for sure, people want to be back doing those things. That's what I hear. Do you hear the same thing? I mean, it's there's kind of two worlds. There's the reality of today, and then there's what people would really like to do. And there's a big gulf there that I see.
Well, and you know, Peter, you're hitting on what actually is a big threat, really, to the economic recovery and part of our five-pillar plan. I mean, there has never been a time where people's personal behavior has been more directly connected to our economic vitality. And a lot of this wear your mask, social distancing, wash your hands, that sort of social compliance that we need to see, what we're hearing from a lot of employers is there's a lot of fatigue around that. People just don't want to do it anymore, and they want to gather in groups of more than 50 people. But we can see what's happened in the South and what's happened in California. When people are non-compliant, you know, things start to shut down again. So we feel in this five-pillar plan I told you about we've developed, the first one is really about connecting people to their role in keeping the economy open. And later this month, we're launching a very big social public service campaign with the Buffalo News and Channel 2, all the banks, grocery stores, et cetera, really around this issue of creating social pressure to wear your mask, wash your hands, and social distance. It's a big deal. And the other big driver for us is going to be how much of people in this community, how much money they spend in this community. It's tempting for all of us, and I'm as guilty as anyone, of having primesia, where, you know, ordering all this stuff from Amazon, and I don't even know what I'm getting. But we've got to support local businesses with our pocketbooks because the research shows the smaller the business, the more risk there is of them closing. And all you need to do is drive down a business district, any of them, pick them in the city, in the suburbs, and you can see already there are some empty storefronts. So it's going to be up to us to really keep the economy moving, and everybody individually has a role in making that work.
You know, they're calling this economy the homebody economy. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that phrase, but it doesn't surprise me. Well, people are investing in their houses and stuff. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, number one, they're buying a house if they can, and there's inventory is very, very tight, so we're having multiple offer situations everywhere almost. And it's exciting, I guess, from us, but it's also very frustrating for us and also for the customers. But the process that people are going through is just getting a home. They want a place that's theirs, because so much of activity is now centered around the home, because people can't do the things they were normally doing. So the importance, for example, of digital connection is critical. I mean, and there's, we're learning right now through the process of, and I'm sure you're seeing this too, through the process of hopefully seeing kids go back to school, how, if that's not possible, how important the connection of that home to everything else becomes even more critically important. Yet there's the number, which I'll get wrong, something like 16,000 households with kids in them in the city of Buffalo that don't have adequate internet connections, so that if we stay virtual or become virtual, that there's very little way that those young people can participate. So are you through the partnership, are you looking at the issue of connectedness and how if we are going to be at home for a while, or if we're going to be limited in our ability to get out and about like we normally do, or even go to school, are you working on those things with the appropriate organizations around town?
Well, I would be, we aren't doing anything specifically in that area right now, although the providers of those technical services are members of ours, and of course we talk to them a lot. We've got an executive from Charter, for example, on our board of directors. But there is a lot written about the digital divide, which is really what you're talking about. And it's just a form of, you know, this is really a racial equity issue as well, mm-hmm. you know, the haves and the have-nots. And it is a critically important, not just because of the pandemic, but pre-pandemic. You know, a lot of really important learning and resources are online. And when children can't access the things that they need, they are going to be left behind. So, you know, I do think that the silver lining of the pandemic is that some of these issues that, you know, were maybe not so visible before are becoming more visible and will demand a community response. I think the school issue from a business point of view is really troubling where we are right now. You know, and I do want to a positive shout out to the governor. I think he's doing the very best job he can in a place where the rules have not been written. But when you talk, and I talk to my own employees about, you know, the uncertainty around when are my kids going to be able to go to school or not, and split schedules, and I just don't know how parents are going to manage all of that, and what's going to happen to these kids who are not, you know, are not having the advantage of that full school experience. So I think this is a big issue. I know the Oshai Foundation is very focused on this, as is the Community Foundation. So I think the philanthropic community is really going to lead the discussion around how to bridge those gaps.
One of the things about this point in time, and I'm sure you're seeing it, is that the trends that were moving along through business and society more generally have been accelerated. One of which, obviously, is this whole interconnectedness issue, and how we're connected, and going along with this homebody economy thing, because the home has become, in many cases, the workplace too for a lot of people. The importance of that connection is cannot be overstated. Having said all that, we've still got this inherent human desire, need, whatever you want to call it, to be with each other, to go out to, I was listening to a report on the radio coming in here today about church going. And these are things that have been completely disrupted. Do you see, or how do you see that, is there a connection with the business world and all that? In other words, are there parts of the economy that are just going to go away because the speed of this transition will being accelerated will just make certain parts of our business community obsolete?
I do think there are a few things that are going to have a permanent impact. I mean, you've hit on one of them.
which is the ability to do remote work. So when you talk about people's willingness to, you know, the convenience of working from home, et cetera, I think we will see that as a permanent sort of fixture in the workplaces of tomorrow. The sense of what you're bringing up about the isolation of people working at home and they're missing the sense of community, I'm hearing from some employers that that's a real issue because the culture of a business and why someone wants to work there, it is in part because their experience of going to work and working with their colleagues and, you know, brainstorming and doing all of those things. And, you know, I think for now, you know, it's okay in the sense that this happened where there were sort of established teams, but I think about it in terms of my own self. How would I bring a brand new employee in and get them acclimated to the culture of the partnership and get them to feel like they're a part of the team when they are sitting in their, you know, bedroom at home dialing in? So I think we've got to figure that out, figure out how to gap that, you know, to bridge that sort of psychological gap, because otherwise, you know, it will impact innovation. It will impact a lot of things for employers. So those are two things I think that are definitely going to be permanently changed as we move forward in terms of products and services. One of the things that has been so inspiring to me. When I told you we did these weekly groups of manufacturers and commercial real estate people, like the level of innovation around how to do the work. Like you said, they'll figure out a way to get it done. We've got one manufacturer and their sort of assembly part of their company is sort of a fine motor skill assembly part. And the training of employees, like they do, like two guys standing next to each other, right? Well, they can't do that anymore. So this particular manufacturer built a cart with a huge plexiglass wall where they could pass the parts from one side to the other on this mobile cart so you could still get close to that person to do the training. I mean, I just find the innovation so interesting. And I think that hopefully that will be, you know, part of what comes out of this is going to be innovation around a lot of things.
Dottie, we have to go to break right now, but we'll come back. I want you to hold that thought because that's an extremely important thought. We'll be right back with more with Dottie Gallagher, President and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, after these very important messages.
Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features 3 bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, 2-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the always updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place in the world where we can find a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, all through upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and through links to Boston, Massachusetts as well. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and I'd like to encourage you to call them today. We are at historic low interest rates. They have never been lower in the 50 years that we've been recording interest rates. They've never been lower than they are today. It is positively an incredible opportunity if you're considering buying or even refinancing, and you want to talk to the people at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And when you get them on the phone, ask about our pre-purchase commitment, even our warm home loan. And if you've already talked to another lender, consider this. We offer what we call the second look at Hunt Mortgage, which means that we'll take a look at whatever offer you've received from another lending institution just to make sure that it's the very best deal you're going to get. If it isn't, we'll give you the one. And that's our guarantee. And if we can't beat it, we'll give you a gift certificate. So it's an absolutely no-lose proposition. Call today, 633-3700. I'm in the studio live remote today with Dottie Gallagher, who is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. And we've been talking about the issues surrounding the changes that are by necessity taking place in the business community, and there's no better person in Western New York to give us kind of a bird's eye view of what's going on than Dottie. So Dottie, before the break, you were talking about one particular manufacturer who had adapted their facility in a very innovative way so that people could actually work together and yet be somewhat, or at least physically, safe from one another. Is this one of the things that concerns me is that we're going through all these changes, and do you see these as permanent? Do you see this as something that's we're just going to be, it's going to be part of our business life and our social life, for that matter, indefinitely?
I do think that there will be permanent changes as a result of the pandemic and the way we do things. Like I said, I think remote work will be part of the plan going forward. Not that people will all do what they're doing now, which is 100% remote work, but companies have seen that employee satisfaction can go up and the productivity has not gone down, and they can save money in real estate. So those are the kinds of things I think we'll see a permanent impact on. I don't have a crystal ball in knowing what people, if we're going to all have a little PTSD after this in terms of the mask wearing and all that, but certainly for the next couple of years, I think we are going to see that this is a permanent change to our society. And I do think there are some negative impacts. I think it is very challenging for people to change and adapt. What gives me a sense of security and hope that things will get back to what we consider normal is to look at those pictures from the pandemic in 1918, and to know that we came out of that and most of us didn't even know we had a pandemic in 1918. So, life will return to some form of normal, post-vaccine and depending on what happens with the worldwide community moving forward.
As you consider permanent changes, though, how do you see things like a sporting event evolving?
Well, those are the things I wish I had the answer in all of this. And I really don't know. And I know that really smart people are trying to figure this out. The common thoughts are a reduction in capacity, so you can do social distancing in those places. But, I think about places like Shays Buffalo as an example, where, that's a not-for-profit theater that does touring Broadway shows. They don't make a ton of money on those shows. I mean, they make some money, enough money to keep the place open. But if they have to operate at whatever, 30% capacity or 6-foot distance, I don't know how the business model works to be able to keep doing that. I think this, when you talk about professional sports, if they can keep the athletes healthy, I think there probably is a micropayment model and broadcast or something to keep those sports going. I don't know that. But just, I don't understand how the economics are going to work on some of those large scale things that have been in the past. It's just going to be, we just have to wait and see.
Well, I guess that's termed the gate, how much money comes in through the gate for any of these events. And many of them depend on the gate for their existence. Certainly every local event depends on that. The ones that have a national audience, like professional football or baseball or something like that, there's a revenue stream that's there regardless of how many people show up at the stadium. But I think that gets old fast in my mind. And I just wonder how much of the real dynamic of a sporting event is lost because there's nobody there to watch it in live. And there was always a premium, I think, in people's minds about being there live. And just like there, I think there's still a premium about being in the office live or being at the plant live. And you referred to it earlier and how those two workers interacted at that manufacturing facility. Nikki Hopkins at the Jacobs Institute was talking at a dinner one night about the concept of collisions, where people just bump into each other in the hallway. And all of a sudden, out of that comes a dialogue and then an idea. And from that idea, beginning of some research, and it just goes on and on from there. That can't happen, through a pre-planned Zoom, I don't think. It just seems awkward. Maybe we'll get used to it. But
I agree with you. But I also think, the fact of the matter is, and if you talk, and I'm sure Dr. Hopkins would attest to this, when you look at the rates of transmission of COVID among essential workers do better than the general population in terms of contamination. Why is that? Because they comply. They wear their masks. They wash their hands. I mean, this is a disease that can be managed. So, you know, to the extent that we can reinvent our workplaces to allow that sort of, you know, with appropriate social distancing, with masks, with hand washing, all of those things, we can get back to a life that is going to feel like what we had before. I mean, look at other countries around the world that, you know, New Zealand is an example. I think they have 3 cases of COVID in the entire country of New Zealand. So, you know, it can. This is a disease that, with people in the community do what they are supposed to do, and people in New York generally have, we can live through this and have the life, most of the life that we had before. So I think this is what I mean about keeping up the social pressure, people's sort of fatigue around the, you know, making wearing masks a political statement to me is lunacy. I mean, this is just, that's where I, you know, if you were to ask me, what am I most disappointed about as a result of this? It's really that people, you know, deliberately are choosing to ignore the science of how we can control this disease. And, you know, people who don't like the governor and there are lots of them, and people who don't like the president and there are lots of them. This is not a political issue. This is an issue about how do we control public health and how do we do the right thing. And, you know, I do think our county executive deserves to be commended by sort of leading in this space, and that you, looking at our hospitalizations and transmissions, you can see that we're doing a good job here. And so when you talk about football games and bigger things, and that's going to require the whole country to get their act together. Like Canada, that border is not going to reopen until the whole country gets their act together. So we aren't going to get back to the things that we really love unless we all agree to the social contract, which is we're going to work together to eradicate the transmission of this disease.
Well, people are saying that really won't happen until there's one of two things or both, and that would be adequate therapeutics. So that people who do become ill can be treated and effectively can be hopefully cured through some therapeutic process. And the other one, obviously, is a vaccine. The problem that we have with a vaccine, as I'm sure you know, is that this is a RNA virus, and there's never been a vaccine ever in the history of man that has been effective for an RNA virus. So we're banking on something happening soon that has never happened before, and I'm trusting in the ingenuity of our scientists and their ability to overcome that. But
I agree with what you're saying to a point, but I think when you look around the world, look at Italy, look at New Zealand, look at places that, you know, had big surges of this virus, and where they are today is a much different place in terms of the rate of infection and life as we know it. I mean, this is Americans, for some reason, are not, you know, and I don't mean all, are just not being as compliant as people are in other countries. And that can make a difference. I think that's my frustration is if you look at those countries and look at the map of countries that Americans are no longer allowed to visit because of the rate of transmission in our country. We can do more. We don't have to wait for a vaccine in order to really get our economy back to where it needs to be. We just have to work together and understand the science and follow the science. That's what has to happen. We got to take all this political nonsense out of the equation.
I wish that were possible, but you and I both know that it's not possible. So I certainly would agree with you on all those things. And I wasn't arguing that, you know, we have to wait for these things to happen. That's not the point. There's 4 things that are in this process. One is personal protection equipment, and you've pointed that out several times. That has to happen. Secondly, and this is also happening to a greater extent in this country than anywhere else in the world, and that's testing. And then through that, hopefully some contact tracing that would lead us to the source or other people that might be infected. Therapeutics, as you pointed out, you know, whether they're there or not, that shouldn't stop us from hopefully reengaging in business. And then ultimately, hopefully, a vaccination that could be widely administered the government's making a big bet on that right now, and hopefully the bet will pay off.
Well, like you said, you know, even though we've never been able to sort of tackle this type of virus before, this is not something that just the United States is working on, right? It's the best minds in the U.S. It's the best minds all over the world, and we are all that level of innovation and science is exciting to the whole world to be working to solve a problem that we all share. So I'm with you. I feel optimistic that we will overcome.
And we're going to adapt. I mean, that's ultimately what has to happen. That's what human beings do, and we'll figure out a way. We certainly have adapted in some industries, including the housing industry. We've adapted. You know, it's working, and it's working to a point where the month of July was the best month in 109 years for our company. And we'll be right back with more from our house viewers after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome to the West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features 3 bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, 2-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the ever-changing and ever-improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call today, 633-3700. I'm live remote today, respecting social distance, with the president and CEO of Buffalo Niagara Partnership, Dottie Gallagher. And we've been talking about in a general sense, the impact of what we're all going through, the COVID-19 pandemic, on the business community and what it means for the immediate future and hopefully not too distant future in terms of kind of reestablishing a presence for all businesses in some way, shape, or form going forward. Dottie, we've got a caller on the line. We're going to take a call in just a second, but we also have a message that was sent to us by text, and that is to the effect that the executives at various levels of government have a seemingly condescending tone, that treating us like children and issuing executive orders right and left, and really this is a, as you know, an exceedingly exceptional situation politically, and I'm not getting into political discussion of right, left, or what that. All I'm talking about is the exercise of executive authority. Hopefully, this is done with some kind of guidance from the appropriate professionals. But doesn't that kind of fly in the face of elected officials that all of a sudden their position is basically neutered because of the executive orders that are being thrown around all over the place?
Well, you know, it would depend on which executive orders. I will say that, you know, there's no question that within some industry guidance, you know, it's some, like, you know, and you probably heard and saw a lot about hair salons and restaurants, and there are some of that industry guidance that we hear back from a lot of people that feels like it's overkill. We hear from businesses, for example, that the restrictions on workplace safety are much more stringent in New York when they've got multiple locations around the country. So we definitely hear that. You know, we hear from some people that there's a sort of an overarching reach. And, you know, I appreciate the text message of the caller. And I think, you know, that sentiment that's being expressed is, you know, people are reacting to that in a way that, you know, trying to exercise their own personal authority. So I get that tension, and I think probably there's people who are right on both sides of all of this, but I that's my sort of appeal earlier was to say, look, forget about what they're all saying. Just, you know, pay attention to Dr. Fauci and the scientists and really look at what's happening in the rest of the world and just make the decisions that are best for your personal health and your family's personal health. And ultimately, that will be what's best for society and our community. So I feel like we have to have a little bit of understanding, both at the federal and the state level, that our government has never, the government that is in place right now, has never dealt with anything of this scale ever. I was talking to my daughter about this. You know, I think about my grandparents who lived through World War II and the Depression, but my mom, you know, she never lived through anything like this. And I said to my daughter, try to make her understand, this is, you know, in your lifetime, this will be the event that you will always remember. Mm-hmm. This is, hopefully it doesn't get any worse than what this. But and when people say unprecedented, you know, it's an overused word, but I think in this case, it's true. So
well, this is the thing. I feel for these young people. I feel for college seniors, high school seniors. This is the time of their life, and to see it completely compromised or changed and so radically that it doesn't look anything like what the vision was in their mind. Dottie, we've got a couple callers. Let's take a call. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Dottie. Yeah, Dottie, I'm a member of the Rochester Chamber. We got a great leader in Bob Duffy. Who, by the way, I've known, not that well personally, but I remember when he was walking the beat back in the 80s on Main Street in Rochester as a policeman. Anyway, he's come a long way. I got to tell you, our GDP went down, 33% in the second quarter. And I think the governor did a decent job at the beginning. I think he's blowing it right now. The thing that I do not hear, and I hear it from experts at Yale and Stanford, is herd immunity. I have not heard one iota coming out of the governor's on herd immunity. My prediction is this. I think, in fact, I've emailed Bob Duffy on it a couple times. I got sort of a response from his chief of staff, but not much in that. I think a leader like you and Bob Duffy should lobby the governor to look at herd immunity. I just recent statistics in Sweden just came out last week. Sweden, as you know, didn't lock down as hardly at all. Their schools are open, whatever, and they're doing very favorably well right now. And the key is herd immunity, and I think you should look into it because this is going to be prolonged.
John, I'm relatively certain that herd immunity is. Is there a question there someplace, John?
Yes, Daddy, are you going to talk or do some research on herd immunity and help us as business people and citizens to have the governor change some tactics?
How would you respond to that? I mean, obviously, herd immunity has been written about. It's all over the place. I'm certain that every governmental authority is conscious of this is and ultimately, if you look back at the Spanish flu, that is what solved that, at least at that moment in time, because there was also no vaccine, there were very few therapeutics. Is that what we really have to ultimately go through?
You know, I'm not a doctor, and I don't even play one on the radio, so I don't know. I really don't know the answer to John's question, but I do know that one of the challenges with obtaining herd immunity is that a lot of people have to get the disease, and the challenge about COVID is that the death rate. You know, more people have died of COVID. I think it's the equivalent of 5 Vietnam Wars. I mean, so we can't lose sight of the death rate. And I had the advantage of meeting with Secretary Azar, Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services, about these issues. And there are people in the Trump administration who do believe that as the death rate comes down because of therapeutics and other things, that will allow less fear and with really good contact tracing, being able to isolate where the outbreaks are, that ultimately that there will be enough control there. But I think until that death rate comes down and we see people are still dying every day, I don't know that they can seriously sort of let the chips fall. But to John's request and question, I'll give Bob a call and we'll have a chat. Bob and I are friends, and definitely we'll follow up on John's thoughts.
You know, I want to bring this back to business, and I want to bring this back to housing, because our mission here on this show is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate in all the communities we serve. And you mentioned earlier about the impact on you had some kind of meeting with some commercial real estate developers or real estate professionals. What was the context of that, and what would be the outcome of those kind of discussions?
So when we were meeting with those two groups, it was really to bring together developers and commercial real estate professionals that had to keep their businesses open. Either they were residential or they were, they had tenants that were essential businesses. Mm-hmm. It's really about, what are you doing? Like, what one of the other observations, in addition to the innovation, Peter, is that business owners have been extremely generous with each other, talking about how they are overcoming and what tactics and strategies they've put in place in terms of managing the challenges that have been in business. So, for example, the commercial real estate people were really talking about the challenges with elevators. Mm-hmm. And in buildings where you've got a lot of people living. And so there was a lot of talk about, do you have signage up? Do you have video cameras? How are you preventing people from gathering in your lobbies? You know, how are you going to get people to sort of do what they need to do? And, and things like, dividing a unique entry and exit paths in buildings, and what's worked and what hasn't worked. So it really was almost like a joint learning experience. And when they were going through it, for those 12 weeks where we had these calls, it was all happening in real time, and where did you get your temperature, your temperature checking devices? And are you using one that takes everyone's temperature? Are you recording people's temperatures? That kind of thing, sort of sharing with one another what eventually have become best practices, which, by the way, we published in a guidebook that you can find on our website called Keep Buffalo Niagara Working, a Guide to Safely Reopening. So some of the best thinking at the time of those companies, they are just freely sharing with other companies to try to help get through it. So and we see a lot of that. And I guess the one thing I would like to say, Peter, because I know we're running out of time, is there are a lot of what we're seeing with small businesses, and small businesses are the bread and butter of our community. They are where all the jobs are. And it's extremely challenging for a lot of small businesses to access help that's out there. And I would say to any small business owner that's listening, if you go to the partnership.org website, we've got something called BizLink. You can fill it out, and we will find the answer to your question or help navigate you to any product or service, whether it's a financial product or service or PPE information that you need or some unique workforce issue that you've got. Please call us, because if we don't have the answers on our staff, a number of our members who are attorneys, accountants, and HR professionals are volunteering their time to help small businesses. So there's no cost, and we will connect you to whatever it is that you need, and just go to our website and we'll try to help you out.
What is the website again, Dottie?
It's thepartnership.org.
Okay, great. I have to share with you that we're getting a few texts in. One is, Peter, I listen to your program every week just to make sure I don't miss the Saturday that Dottie is your guest. Dottie is in all caps. She's great. Please invite her more often. So I'd share that with you.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Well, you should tell, I am, as I've made this joke before, Peter, but I am the Alec Baldwin of the Peter Hunt Show. I think this is my 7th or 8th appearance. And, Alec is always on Saturday Night Live. So
you're right. It's number 8. Exactly. So you are always a go-to for me, Dottie, because you bring a perspective that very few people in our community have. In your constant dialogue with our business community, it helps me certainly to understand what really is happening here that impacts certainly our industry. One last thing I just want to, I talked about this homebody economy. One of the things that how we're changing our look at each individual listing we take is how people can work inside their home. Because if this is going to be with us for 6 months or 10 years, who knows? people need a place where they can go inside their home to work, and students need a place where they can study. And so it's changed the way we physically look at a house, which was really one of the unintended consequences of of this experience. So I don't know if your people are in your organization are reflecting that as they send people home to work. Does that come up at all?
Well, I know that when we were looking at remote work pre-pandemic, remote work practices, because that was a trend prior to the pandemic, a request from a lot of employees, mm-hmm. we're reading some remote work policies from like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and a few other major employers. And what's interesting about Bank of America, a few others, and what they require in order to permit remote work is a designated workspace. And it's very prescriptive. You know, you need to have a desk, you need to be able to close the door, and all of that, essentially getting to what you're getting to, because what you have to try to have a place where your headspace can be, you know, focused in terms of working from home. So I
got to jump in here, Dottie, because we've got only a few seconds left. Dottie Gallagher, President and CEO of Buffalo Niagara Partnership. Thank you for your eighth visit to the show. And I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all upstate is Hunt Country.